Wednesday, February 10th, 2016. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, sports writer, coming to you from Titletown. I mean, Denver, Colorado. That's right. I said it. Hey, you know, we release a new podcast every single Wednesday, and we bring you a different outlook on the world of sports than you get anywhere else. You can subscribe to the podcast. You can go to iTunes. You can pretty much go anywhere that podcasts are hosted and subscribe to the podcast. Or you can head over to our website and listen to it there. DailyDoseSports.wordpress.com. Put up a new article every week. Put up the podcast there every single week. If you would like to contact the show, I've had a couple people just this past week. I don't know why. I've had a couple people contact the show. You can email us at DailyDoseSports@gmail.com. That is D-A-L-Y, DailyDoseSports@gmail.com. You can also follow us, like us on Twitter or Facebook. Both of those are at DailyDoseSports. Hey, today on the show, we are going to recap Super Bowl 50. Did you hear a Super Bowl preview last week? Hopefully you were able to listen to the Super Bowl preview last week. Longtime caller to the show, Raymond in Washington, D.C., called in and gave us his pick. You know, I had a number of requests to bring him back after his pick because, you know, he kind of was down on the Broncos. He kind of said that was going to be ugly. I'll play a little bit of that for you. And Raymond is going to stop by just briefly, get him back after the game. You know, he'll probably complain about how the game went. He'll probably whine about some things. You just never know. Also, a good friend of the show, Larry from Centennial, is going to stop by, and we'll recap the game and take a look at a couple of the things. Again, usually, as usually happens, sports media sometimes gets some things wrong. We want to try to set the record straight and bring you a common sense approach to the Super Bowl recap. As usual, as we always do, we have to have our Daily Dose Top 5, always a very popular segment here. Something that you want to stick around for is the Daily Dose Top 5. Seems that we always get some comments on that. A couple things coming out in the world of sports news in the last, you know, week or so, last few days or so. You might have seen that the Los Angeles Lakers have finally announced a punishment now for Blake Griffin. Blake Griffin will be suspended 4 games without pay for punching a team staff member. Remember, he went out, had dinner or whatever it was with like the team manager, and then they ended up getting into it, and he socked him and broke his shooting hand. I don't know if you heard this, and you got to suspend him. You have to do something, you know, to him for doing something that dumb, not thinking of the team in that situation. I don't know if you heard this. Did you hear there was a rumor going around that the Denver Nuggets had spoken to the Los Angeles Clippers about possibly acquiring Blake Griffin? Maybe the Clippers are fed up with this situation. Maybe they are looking to move him, that type of thing. Now, if you didn't hear, and that's legit, you can go look it up. The Nuggets actually did inquire about possibly acquiring Blake Griffin. Just if you didn't know about that, or you didn't, I will let you know how that conversation went. Here's how that conversation went. Nuggets call, Clippers answer. Yeah, what's up? Hey, this is the Denver Nuggets. Just checking and seeing if you guys have any interest in maybe, you know, giving us Blake Griffin. No? Really? You sure about that? Yeah, you don't have any players to give us in return. I mean, why would we do this? We have an all-star forward here. What are you going to give us? We don't really have anything. I guess we didn't really think this through. Okay, well, that's all we have. All right, bye-bye. That's how that went. And you might think I'm kidding. I'm not. That's exactly how that went. Let's see. A couple other things coming out in the world of sports. Mississippi's football program, Ole Miss, apparently was cited by the NCAA in 13 of the 28 rules violations levied against the school in the notice of allegations the university recently received. 9 of those violations have occurred during current coach Hugh Freeze's tenure. I know you're going to start hearing a little bit about this. Ole Miss was apparently having some recruiting violations that, you know, and now the ESPN or the NCAA is looking at these violations. Really? Ole Miss was cheating when they were recruiting? Are we supposed to be surprised by that? I mean, next thing you're going to tell us, Johnny Manziel was, you know, hung over at team meetings or something. Are you going to tell me that's news too? Stop telling me these things that aren't news. I know Ole Miss cheats. If they're recruiting a kid, I know they're cheating. And if Johnny Manziel is anywhere in the news, I know it's probably because he's drunk. That's not news. Let's move on to something else. George Karl. There was talk that Sacramento Kings coach George Karl was going to be fired. Now it looks like he's not going to. Vlade Divac announced that they were going to be keeping George Karl. We know that he butts heads, and we know that, you know, this team kind of has the feel like maybe they're kind of quitting on George Karl. Sacramento started off looking a little bit strong. They were sitting at, right around that eighth spot. Now they've dropped a few games, but it's interesting to me. We were just talking about how Sacramento, man, they're really starting to come around. They might be getting together, and then they lose, you know, three, four games in a row. Oh, well, George Karl's getting fired. Easy. I mean, ownership acts like they're backing Karl. They say they're going to at least stick with him for a little longer. We'll see how that goes. Karl is a guy who will antagonize some of his best players. But the other thing that he will also do, he will eventually win. And they will either buy in or they'll be gone. I don't know. We'll keep an eye on what's going on in Sacramento. I guess the biggest news, probably coming out this week post-Super Bowl, was the fact that the New York Knicks agreed to fire head coach Derek Fisher. Now, there's a few things about this whole Derek Fisher thing that kind of stand out to me. First off, Derek Fisher was hired with no experience. He had never coached. He had never done, anything sideline-wise. He was coming straight over from being a player to being that. That's not the issue. The other thing is that the Knicks have looked better this year than they did a year ago. So you sit there and you say, well, what's the problem? How is he getting fired? You know, we're starting to hear some good things about the Knicks. We're starting to hear the Knicks are starting to compete a little bit. Here's the issue for Derek Fisher. He was starting to lose his locker room. When you see some of the things he did, when you see the issues that he had, you know, with Matt Barnes, when you see the issues that he had with his substitution pattern where he would play a guy in the first half and then not play him the rest of the game, when he would not play a guy the entire first half, and then he would have him in overtime. I mean, just weird substitution pattern. The problem is that you can't buy or you can't force respect it with your coach. That has to be earned. That has to be something that you either have or you don't have. He did not have any respect in that locker room, I don't think. I think all those guys looked at him and you were just like, man, you are Phil's puppet. You are Phil Jackson's puppet, and you are nothing more than that. Now the Knicks will be looking for a new coach. Now, you're going to start getting rumors. Who's it going to be? Is Phil Jackson going to come down and coach? Nope. I can tell you that right now. Phil Jackson's not going to come coach. I don't think he can do it physically. I don't think his back will allow him to go down and coach. And it is demanding to go down there and coach physically for him. That's not going to work. You're going to hear about Luke Walton. Luke Walton obviously looked great with Golden State. You're going to hear about him for both the Lakers and the Knicks. Here's the problem. You just got rid of one coach with no experience. Are you really going to bring on another coach with basically no experience? You can say, well, look what he did with Golden State. I got news for you, kids. I can coach Golden State right now. There's a lot of people that can coach Golden State right now. That's a machine. They're doing things on their own. There's not much for him to do right there right now. That's not the situation with the Knicks. The Knicks have some issues. I'll tell you who they ought to go here. They ought to go get Tom Thibodeau. Tom Thibodeau would make that team very, very competitive because he would make them work at the defensive end of the floor, and he would improve that team. That's who they should go get. It's going to be interesting to see who the Knicks could get. Here's something to think about. This is something briefly to think about before we jump into Super Bowl stuff. So far, I believe we've already seen six NBA coaches get fired, and we're not even to the All-Star game yet. You've fired a fifth of the coaches that started the season. This is some high turnover, job here. I mean, these are jobs that guys cannot hold onto. If I'm a coach, you might want to start looking over your shoulder because these are some tough, tough, tough jobs to keep. And there's probably going to be a few more of these. I mean, we already know, you know, George Karl and that kind of thing. There's a few coaches out there that are, I don't know, you got to tread a little bit lightly. Going to be interesting to see. NBA All-Star game coming up this weekend, we are going to have to, talk about that a little bit. And here's the thing with NBA All-Star Weekend. Valentine's Day is on Sunday. I tell you guys this every year. Take care of the Valentine's Day stuff so you can watch all you want. Make sure you get a handle on that. Valentine's Day is on Sunday. Make sure you get that covered so that you can watch, you know, all the dunk contests and all that stuff because there's nothing else on. Let's be honest. The Super Bowl's over. There's nothing else on to talk about right now. You got to make sure that you can at least watch that stuff. Okay, we've got a lot to get to. We've got to get busy here. Now, for those of you who may have missed it, last week on the show, we discussed the Super Bowl with one of our favorite callers. Raymond from Washington, D.C. came on. We talked at length about the Super Bowl, how we thought the Super Bowl was going to go. Raymond was good enough to come back on. Good enough sport. He's going to come back on, and he's going to talk a little bit about the game just briefly. Raymond, I have to say thank you to you, first off, for coming back on the show.
Hey, glad to be here.
Now, if you did not hear it, I want to just play just a quick clip of what Raymond and I talked about last week.
I don't know if your listeners know that you're obviously a Bronco fan.
Of course.
And I think, like most Bronco fans, especially this season, well, they like to spin things towards the defense because, of course, things work better that way for the Broncos.
Right.
So if you focus on defense, if you highlight defense, well, then the Broncos will win the game. This game is not going to come down to defense. I hate to break it to you, Bronco fans. This game is not going to be about the defense.
It's going to be about the offense?
It's going to be about the offense, and you're going to need to score some points.
But here's
Cam Newton, Black Superman, is going to score some points. I'm thinking a 28-14, 31-14, yeah, something like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry. Winner, Denver 24, Carolina 20. You heard it here first. Okay, you heard it right there. First of all, what do you have to say for yourself after you hear that, Raymond?
Well, I guess I'd have to say I was a tad bit wrong. The game did, in fact, come down to defense. Although I will say, I think I did have a feeling that the game would be play out somewhat a defensive type of struggle.
Well,
I just didn't figure that the Broncos would be the ones dishing it out.
Right, right. And to be fair, you did preface your prediction. You said if Cam does not turn the ball over, you repeated that. That was the case. He did turn it over. Let me ask you this. Looking at the game, when you were watching the game, what was it that played out, I guess, differently than what you saw? Was it Denver's defense was better than you thought? Was it Carolina's offense was worse than you thought?
No, I think that I thought that Carolina would make moves to maybe block Von Miller.
Right. That seems like that would be an obvious choice.
Yeah, I thought that, you know, hey, we're not going to let this guy beat us. And I just thought that, you know, after the Patriot game and how he's performed throughout the season, that there was no way that the Panthers would allow Von Miller to be so disruptive.
Yeah, I was a little surprised that they did that too. I kept waiting for them to kind of chip him. We're going to come out here with a running back or with a tight end. It didn't seem like they did that all day.
Yeah, there was no adjustment made. And in fact, no adjustment. And then not only no adjustment in blocking him, no adjustment maybe to shorten up his release, or, you know, he's taking deep drops still. And he's sitting back there as if, you know, he's had that type of time. And I thought that the Panthers would make the adjustments and make sure that he was protected, and they didn't do that.
I didn't think Ron Rivera was very good all day. When I saw him, you know, throwing out the review flag so early and using up his last review, his last challenge, I thought it was a little bit odd. I didn't think he adjusted. I kept waiting for them. Remember that play where Cam rolled out to the right, threw it back over to Greg Olsen to the left? I kept waiting for those kind of plays to start coming in more frequently. We didn't see that. It seemed like they were just like, nope, this is what we run. Too bad. We're gonna just do it anyways.
Yeah, it was very stubborn. It was stubborn offense the Panthers were playing there. We're going to do our stuff regardless as to what's going on. They just insisted on, you know, being the Panthers, and they really needed to make some changes. So,
At what point in the game were you expecting to hear from me?
I think it just became apparent over the course of the game that the Panthers were having a lot of difficulty scoring, and were not going to be scoring. And I think at that point, I just expected to hear from all of them. And although Peyton wasn't doing anything,
right?
But at the same time, Peyton being the veteran that he is, he wasn't doing anything to hurt the team.
Not the huge mistakes. He had the one bad interception, but it wasn't in a bad spot. It didn't really end up hurting him. They ended up going 3 and out on the ensuing drive. Exactly.
Right.
He didn't have that huge, costly turnover, that pick six even. Did you have a problem that final fumble, did you have a problem with Cam not diving for it?
I did have a problem with that, to be honest. Everybody's out there giving it all. Sure, he's the franchise quarterback, the face of the team, hell, the face of the NFL, the MVP right there. But you've got to give a better effort on the ball. If there's a ball on the ground, Cam, you need a better effort there. But yeah, I did have a problem with that. That wasn't good on your part. Yeah.
And I didn't have as big of a problem with the stuff after the game. I truly didn't. I get it. You're mad. He's never been a good loser. I don't know if I want my quarterback to be a good loser. But I had a problem with him not diving for that ball that maybe would have been. He looked at it and said, "Hey, I've been hit enough today." I really think that's what he thought. I've been hit enough. I'm not diving into this pile and getting hit again. You can see that moment of hesitation. Hey, I don't want to keep you. I have to give you a ton of credit for coming back onto the Daily Dose, kind of talking about this again. We're giving you a little bit of a hard time, yes, but I really do appreciate you coming back on the Daily Dose and kind of facing. Like I said, I had a number of people that were asking about you. They were like, "You got to have him back on."
I'm wrong rarely, but when I am wrong, I don't have a problem facing the music. I'm a man of my word. I say what I mean, and I mean what I say.
Well, so, I will say this:
I was wrong.
I appreciate that. I genuinely appreciate that. I will say this. It takes a big man to admit that they're wrong. It really does. And it takes a bigger man to point and laugh at that man, and that man is me, and today I am the bigger man. I want to thank you for coming on. You know that you are welcome anytime. We have to do this again sometime.
All right, Clint.
Hey, so we wanted to bring in a Bronco fan to talk a little bit about Super Bowl 50. Wanted to digest this a little bit with a good friend of the show. Larry in Centennial joins us. You know, I saw Larry yesterday. We both went down to the parade and met up down at the parade. Went to the Super Bowl parade yesterday. First off, I got to say thanks to Larry for joining us here on the Daily Dose again.
Hey, Clint, thanks for having me. This is it's awesome, you know, to be on the show, to be able to talk about a victory and everything that comes with it. So thanks for asking me back.
Well, always good to have you here. And you know, we ran into each other at the parade yesterday. The Denver Bronco Parade, I've got to say, I went down to it. I think I went to the one in 98. I don't think I went to the first one in 97. There were so many people yesterday. I know that gets thrown around. They are estimating there was over 1 million people at this thing yesterday. There was a ton of people there.
Well, there were a ton of people, and I don't know how they figure out how they count how many people get down there, but what a great scene it was. And you know, the parade and all the players who, you know, those guys made commitments to be there, so I think they really did appreciate the fact that this was kind of for the fans to yesterday, and that was special, right? I mean,
oh yeah, that was
Manning,
cool to see.
Was at Disneyland the day before, and I saw that Miller made an appearance on Ellen.
Right.
So I mean, these guys have other things to do, and they all seem to be there and enjoying themselves. And what a perfect day for the parade and rally. So what? And just gobs of people.
There were so many. There was just a crush of you. I don't think I've ever been to an event that just had that many human beings at it. And games and concerts and all that kind of stuff. There were so many people down there. And like you said, these guys have to be operating literally on like no sleep. Like they haven't slept in like 4 days because of the schedules they're running and the things that they're doing post Super Bowl. It's just been incredible. I want to talk to you a little bit about the Super Bowl game itself. Obviously, you know, Denver Broncos win their third Super Bowl, beating the Carolina Panthers 24-10. First things first, Larry, that we've really got to get to. What kind of food were you having on Super Bowl Sunday?
Clint, none.
What?
I was nervous. It was very difficult for me to eat. I was all knotted up. So
yeah.
I we did have some things. We had some nachos. We had some chips and salsa.
Okay.
But I wasn't really eating much. I was a ball of nerves watching that game.
Yeah, it was a little bit interesting, especially with the history of the Broncos. They've had their struggles in the Super Bowls, and they've had where it's gone bad, and it's gone really, really score-wise bad. But you just kind of had a feeling about this team that maybe they could get a few things done. I don't watch the pregame stuff. I don't know if you do. I don't watch the pregame stuff, but I did see the introduction of the former Super Bowl MVPs. I thought that was kind of cool to see those guys.
You know, that was great.
Yeah, I like that.
And I don't usually watch pregame stuff either, but the whole family was there, and we didn't have much else to do. So we had the TV on early and watched a lot of pregame. And but yeah, I saw that part, and it was great to see all those guys there. And you know, and now when they announce it, you know, whenever the next time is, we're going to have three MVPs out there.
Yeah, which is really cool. I thought it was interesting just to see which of the former MVPs could like walk well. And I don't even say that being sarcastic. There were older guys that seemed like they were walking better than younger guys. I saw a guy like Larry Zonka. He strolled out there like he was, you know, 35 years old. Right. John Elway has a little bit of hitch to his walk. It was just interesting to see those guys come out.
Absolutely. And you know, some of those guys kind of, they don't get a lot of airtime, right?
Right.
It's all about the younger players.
And, sure.
So I think for a lot of people who were interested in the game and watched the pregame, they got a little bit of history there, which was, you know, really, really kind of fun to see. It was fun for me to see. You know, I remember as a kid, I didn't watch a lot of pro football until, you know, I got a little bit older. So, you know, the Larry Zonkas and Nitschke's and those kind of guys.
Right.
You know, you don't remember too much about until you're reminded, and that was kind of nice to have them pull all those guys out of there.
Yeah, it was, and it was also nice to see Tom Brady get just totally booed like no other. Holy cow!
I think that was the best sign for a Bronco fan,
right?
Because I gotta believe that most of those fans booing were actual Bronco fans for the game, and our voices were heard early.
Definitely. I think that was the first thing I think that stood out to me when I turned on the game and just kind of looked at the stadium, how much orange was in that stadium. They're estimating it was about 50-1 Bronco fan to Carolina fan. It really was amazing. It was like watching a home game or like watching a game, you know, with the Chargers in San Diego.
I haven't talked to anybody who was there at the game yet. Hopefully I'll run into a few folks to kind of get their take on exactly if what we were hearing and seeing on TV was the reality of it all. So, but it sure felt like the Broncos had a large fan contingent there. That was nice to see.
Here's the one thing I don't understand, and I don't know if anyone can explain this. Biggest game in the world, biggest pro football game in the world. Why can't they get the field better prepared than that? It seemed like it was an ice rink.
And those guys were slipping. They talked
all game
on the broadcast how you know, they were changing cleats, and I don't know. I don't know if that's just something that we deal with. It was natural turf to a degree, right? I think that's a combination there, like in a lot of stadiums. But I guess that gives you the, you know, that element of being outside and not being as manufactured as it could be, but I don't know. There was certainly turf being torn up all over the place.
Yeah, there was, and you just saw guys slipping. And I consider, well, that's just the way it is. But keep in mind that this is the same ground crew that painted both Enzo's Broncos prior to the game. So I got to think that they're probably at least a little bit responsible. You know, the game gets going. Opening drive of the game. Denver receives the kick. They go 10 plays, 64 yards, drive right down to the red zone, and then stall like we're so used to this season. That seems like what they do almost in every game. They drive right down the field to open the game.
Like every other game,
yes,
we've played, didn't it?
It totally did. No, and Peyton looked sharp early. I mean, they moved the ball, you know, downfield. It just that it stalled early, and they ended up having a settle for a field goal. But it just kind of felt like, okay, well, yeah, this so far so good. This feels like the same game that we've had all year. Then the next drive, the Panthers take their opening possession, and they go three and out. Right away, I'm going, yeah, this kind of feels like the whole season has felt.
It really did. It couldn't have been, you know, as a Bronco fan, that's the script.
Yeah, it is.
For anybody who thought it was going to be any different than, you know, the previous games, they weren't really paying attention. And so I was encouraged.
I was too.
Yeah, it was a field goal, but, you know, I joke with people who ask, but, you know, as long as our kicker's warmed up and he's hitting them, we're going to be in these games. And it actually was nice to see him get out there early and nail a field goal.
Yeah, it was. And he was so good in the postseason. Brandon McManus was amazing in the postseason. He was just nails all every single game. It seemed like there was no doubt this kid. Since that big miss where he just hacked that thing against Cincinnati, Brandon McManus, I mean, you couldn't have kicked it straighter and more true than he did the rest of the season.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you remember, it wasn't that long ago when he was on shaky ground, and they let him go, right?
Yeah, they let him go last season.
And re-signed him.
Brought back a veteran, yeah.
You know, for anybody else, that could have been the end of it. But, man, you got to give the guy credit for sticking with it. And he's legit. He's a champion. National champion, right?
Yeah, he did it well, and he did it in every game they played in the postseason because they did rely on him so much with that offense struggling. On the Panthers' second drive, Cam throws a little bit of a deep pass to Jericho Cotchery. Cotchery kind of bobbles it, goes to the ground, maybe catch it, maybe didn't. They reviewed it. They had the review. The review comes back. Now, we heard Mike Carey talking on the broadcast, and Mike Carey said that looks like a catch. They came back and they said they didn't want to reverse it. The call was upheld. When I watched it, I didn't think it was a catch, and I'll tell you why, because it seemed like the ball continued to move and move and move and move and move and then barely touched the ground. That to me is not a catch, but I don't understand the NFL catch rules anyway, so maybe I'm the wrong person to ask. I don't know.
Yeah, well, you're not alone, and I think everybody's that way. I'm that way too, and I kind of, you know, we hadn't talked about this. I kind of agree with you. If he had taken a couple steps,
right,
and then had fallen to the ground, and we saw what we saw, I think at least for me, that would have been a catch. He didn't, and the ball did move. So that's the whole: did he really have control of it? And it did hit the ground. So I think the combination of those two things would be why I wouldn't have ruled it a catch, but. I could have gone either way, you know. If
yeah.
he would have called it a catch, I would have been okay with that. But that's kind of how the ball bounces on the whole. They ruled it incomplete and didn't have enough evidence to overturn it, right?
Well, that was the thing for me, because I never saw enough evidence that I could have overturned it. I think had it been ruled a catch, maybe I wouldn't have had enough evidence to overturn that either. Whatever was kind of ruled was what it was going to kind of stay.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. You'll hear people talk about if that play was different, you know, the whole game would have changed.
Right. Well, you're taking a pretty big leap of faith there.
Right. And if you want to go down that road, there's plenty of other things we can talk about that would have changed that game dramatically too if they had been different.
Absolutely, and you could. I mean, every play is a huge play. That's a play that obviously was big. But I don't know if you could have overturned it. The very next play, Cam Newton goes back to pass as he has done pretty much all season. Von Miller makes a big play, gets around the edge, strip sack. Doesn't just because when you see him coming, he's going to hit Cam. You know he's good. He has the presence of mind. I'm going to hit you, and I'm going to rip the ball out of your hands. Rips it out, ball's loose. Malik Jackson covers it in the end zone. Suddenly, it's 10-0 Denver. What are you thinking at this point?
I'm thinking this is great.
Yeah.
That not only did we score on our first drive, but that our defense is making its presence known early. And think back on it, I'm a little surprised that we got to Cam Newton so easily, so early.
Right.
But then you had Von Miller is awesome. Our defense as a whole is number one. You know, I even think I was a little bit convinced that the Panthers would be difficult to deal with on offense.
I thought they would too.
Lighting it up, you know, in the games previous. But no, Miller made a concerted effort, not just to tackle Vaughn, but to make something happen and get that ball loose. And I think that's different than a lot of other defenses and a lot of other individual players out there. He's special.
Yeah, because it wasn't enough just to stop them. They were going to stop them, and they were going to score points of their own. I think that was the big difference. You know, I said going into the game, I said 24-20 Denver. The only thing I had wrong was Carolina just needed to play another four quarters, and then they maybe would have got to that 20. The Panthers did finally get their offense going a little bit in the second quarter. Cam ran a little bit, scrambled up and made a few plays with his legs. They ran a little bit of the misdirection stuff where, you know, they would get the play going one way and they would throw back to the other direction, and they go down the field and get a score 10-7. I thought then, okay, maybe the Panthers have figured this out a little bit. The only I guess reason I had for pause on that was on almost every single play in that drive, when Cam scrambled, he took a big hit.
Well, he did take a lot of hits, and that, I guess we kind of are used to our defense kind of treating, you know, opposing offenses that way, but I also noticed that he looked tired, and he looked tired early.
Yeah, he did.
And I thought, there's got to be something wrong with the picture, because either he's just not used to it, or didn't get enough rest leading up to the game.
Well, I'll tell you what does happen in big games, and I know this just from a coaching perspective. They get players go out there. It's the biggest game. He's a young player. This is a first Super Bowl, that kind of thing. You get so much adrenaline. You get so much hype. You literally kind of hyperventilate yourself, and you have to kind of talk yourself into, I have to remember to breathe, because you're going to be breathing heavy if Von Miller's, you know, breathing down your neck anyways, right? Let alone when there's 80 billion people watching you and this is the biggest game of your life. I thought he kind of wore himself out early, probably getting all excited.
Yeah, I think so too. And this might be the right time to talk about how maybe the entire, you know, maybe not the Carolina defense, but at least the offense was reading a lot about themselves and how good they were. And
yeah, that's a good point.
And maybe thought it was going to be easier than it turned out to be from, you know, kind of the first series.
Well, sure, because, I mean, all year we've seen these guys not just beat people, I mean, annihilate people. They're running through. They were scoring 30 points a game going into this game.
Yeah, and you can look at their schedule, and a lot of people will say they didn't play anybody. They played a few teams that,
yeah,
you know, are
respected. That division is just so bad.
But they did... You know, they did take advantage of a softer, you know, even division and conference schedule, and maybe that had a little bit to do with it. But he got hit more than he's used to, and I think everything since kind of he just didn't really know how to deal with it.
One of the things that we saw early, we saw the play. It was a third and long. A Denver Bronco cornerback, Aqib Talib, gets called for taunting. You had the play on the touchdown drive for Carolina where he tackles Brown, the wide receiver, out of bounds. He face masks and rips him down by his face mask, and then he had the offsides penalty. And there's been a lot of talk here in Denver. Maybe he's going to be suspended. Maybe he's going to be this. Maybe he's going to be that. You know, dumb plays by Talib. Here's my take on Aqib Talib. Those plays were completely and utterly inconsequential. There was absolutely, they didn't change the game in any way whatsoever.
You're right. They didn't. They could have, I think.
They could have, but they didn't.
If you had an immature defense and you had a lot of guys who played on just straight emotion, those are the types of plays that end up, you know, a lot of times meaning much more negative impact than they did. But,
right.
You know, you just look at, even Talib himself is a, he plays with a lot of emotion, but, he is smart. He's good at what he does, part of a special defense. And, to his own admission, he knew what the impact of those plays would be and that they wouldn't, you know, hurt as much as maybe some other people thought, and he turned out to be right.
Well, the taunting penalty, I thought, was kind of college in nature. I mean, both of these guys are yakking at each other. Talib is on his own bench. The wide receiver for the Panthers is on the Denver bench. He could leave. Talib takes his helmet off. He's on his own bench. He can take his helmet off on his own bench. I thought that was weird, but Denver ended up forcing the three and out on that after that penalty anyways.
Yeah.
The face mask, I think he reached out and grabbed whatever he could grab, and I think he got your helmet and he got your face mask, and then he decided, yeah, and I'm going to make a statement right here, and he did.
Well, I think he did, and there's nothing wrong with sending a message.
No.
I don't think he tried to hurt the guy.
No, it cost him about 6 inches.
A lot of that play was momentum,
yeah,
as it turned out to be.
I did too.
Everybody was running towards that sideline. So
it looked ugly, but yeah.
Pull it. It looked probably worse than it was. I'm not saying it's the right thing to do. These guys got to look out for each other, and hopefully they're not trying to hurt each other. But yeah, it was a message-sending play that we're going to play hard, and you know, we might get flagged for it, but that's not going to stop us.
Well, and I don't think Carolina had faced anything like that all season, so I think there was a little bit of a statement there. Broncos offense first half struggling, needed a little bit of a kickstart. The Panthers are forced to punt, and backup wide receiver Jordan Norwood I mean, he catches a punt in traffic, and it's one of those no, yes. I mean, goes 61 yards, and it just a gutsy play. I don't know if I want to say a smart play, but it was a gutsy play. Returns the ball deep into Carolina territory, and they end up getting yet another field goal. You don't need many points with this defense. It's 13-7 in the second quarter.
That's right, and what a gargantuan play to change field of possession. And,
yep, momentum.
And do it with confidence, too.
Yeah, he did. It's not the first time he's done it.
He caught that ball, and he knew what he was going to do with it. Again, this is kind of a recurring theme. I'm not sure the Panthers thought that we were... It's almost like they thought that we were going to let him win. Well, no,
right,
that's not what
right.
happened. We're going to...
They're going to actually show up.
We're going to show up, and we're going to play as hard as we possibly can, and Norwood kind of was a great example of that, and man, just a guy who doesn't have the spotlight, but made a huge, impactful play.
Huge play. Denver goes down there. They get the ball at, I don't know, the inside. I think it was inside the 10. They go three plays, don't get it. They go for it on fourth down. CJ Anderson gets it. They call the holding penalty against Denver, which backs them up 10 yards, and they're forced to kick that. Here's the only interesting part to me about the holding penalty. We didn't see a holding penalty called all day. Denver's defensive line was held the entire day. I know Caroline was whining and saying, we had some calls go against us. This is a pretty big call that goes in your favor and didn't have any type of where we saw any kind of consistency. Well, they've been calling holding all day. No, they literally didn't call holding the entire day, and they called it on this play.
Both you and I know, and there's visual evidence of the Denver defensive line and linebackers being held on numerous plays.
Vaughn got held on his strip sack plays.
I don't know. I'm not really sure what you say about that, because if our defense, and Von Miller in particular, is as good as he is, and they're not holding him,
right,
then
would have been unfair.
I'd be having a conversation with the offensive line and the offensive line coach, right?
Right. So the Broncos lead 13-7 at halftime. Halftime show comes out, and out comes Coldplay, and they played that one Coldplay song. I don't know what they played. I don't know any Coldplay songs. Are you a Coldplay fan? I don't know any. I guess I don't know them well enough.
I'm not a Coldplay fan. I'm not a Beyonce fan.
Right. Was I the only one that thought when Bruno Mars came out that it was Jermaine Jackson and he was on the Victory Tour?
Well, I thought Beyonce might eat Bruno Mars there for a second.
He's a little guy. He is a little dude.
He's got some dance moves though.
Yeah, he was pretty good, and I guess the show in general. I didn't have too much of a beef with the show. I don't really care. I didn't watch it a whole lot, but the one thing I guess that stood out to me was watching Bruno Mars and Beyonce, and then Chris Martin, the lead singer for Coldplay, out there together. It felt to me like you're at the club, and like your math teacher shows up at the club. That's what it looked like, at least. I don't know.
It did a little strange. You mean when they're there, and then he sneaks up in between them?
And he's in between them kind of trying to sing and like, look, guys, I'm dancing too.
Right.
I don't know.
And they kind of look at Beyonce and Bruno Mars, look at each other like, oh, hey. Who showed up here?
Why is he photobombing us? It was odd. I don't know. Maybe that was just me, but whatever. Second half gets going. To start off the second half, again, we started to see a little bit of a flash of the Carolina offense. They go 54 yards, but again, they end up having to settle for a field goal, and Graham Gano misses the field goal and doinks it off the upright.
Well,
and everyone kind of went.
Graham Gano is a pretty good field goal kicker.
He is. He's very good.
And, those are some of the things that can happen when you're in the biggest game of your life, right?
Sure.
And
he pushed it.
I don't know what the impact of that field goal was.
Yeah, could have closed it to 13-10.
13-10, but again, I think we saw what most people weren't ready to kind of see is just the inconsistency of Carolina and
right.
their inability to score points.
Sure.
So, their game isn't scoring field goals like ours is. Their game is scoring touchdowns and lots of them, and that wasn't happening for them.
How many people do you think, Carolina fans-wise, when he hits the upright, uttered the phrase, oh, good, no, you didn't? Do you think that was like a popular phrase? I feel like that would have been a popular phrase. When did you start thinking that, hey, Carolina's in a little bit of trouble? Because I think it was on this play that I started going, this game is not going at all. I mean, we had seen it so far, but I kept, like you said, I kept kind of waiting. Okay, they're going to get it going. When they missed this field goal was when I started going, yeah, it's not going to go their way today.
Yeah, you might be right. I haven't thought about that, but I looked at my wife and I'm thinking, this isn't how this is supposed to work. If you're a Carolina fan, and if you're a Bronco fan, this is exactly how it's supposed to work.
Right.
Make them earn every single point, and it couldn't be going any better at this stage.
Was your wife awake at this point?
Clint, you'd have to. Over the years, my wife has, increased her Bronco fandom.
Good. That's good. That's good to hear.
It used to be she would sort of nap on the way down to the games and wake up for the games.
Sure.
She's all in at this point. And
good. I like that. Yeah, she is straight as an arrow. I like that. Well, Broncos turn around after the missed field goal, go right back down the field, and primarily – As much as we saw Peyton struggled, primarily on this drive, Peyton to Emmanuel Sanders gets clicking. They go 54 yards. 47 of it was Peyton to Emmanuel Sanders on that little skinny kind of seam pattern that Sanders kept running. Yep. Broncos get a field goal. It's 16-7. Now it's a two-score game.
Yep.
Peyton wasn't great, but he did find some gaps. He did get through without making that crucial error. You're up 16-7 again. I started thinking at this point, Denver's in shape here. They're in pretty good shape for where the game's at.
So far, things are going according to plan. We're not running like we want to. So that's still kind of eating away at me. But both times when Manning kind of put a couple passes together, obviously they were important. And had he not done what he did, I'm not sure the outcome would have been the same.
Right.
But so you got to take your chances and your opportunity. You have to take advantage of the opportunities when they're there. And we kind of did that. Again, the script has kind of been the same for the past few games, and this was following it.
You know, I heard a few people say, Brock Osweiler could have won this game. And in a vacuum, I understand what you're saying. Peyton only, put up 141 passing yards. I get what you're saying, but I totally disagree. Because when you saw the post game and you saw the way that the players reacted to Peyton, I think if you would have sat Peyton down in the postseason, I really believe these veterans, you would have had a little bit of a mutiny on your hands. They believe so much in Peyton Manning.
This has been well documented that it's his mental acumen more important at this stage to win a Super Bowl. Let's be honest here. If you put Cam Newton and Peyton Manning up against each other, physically, there's no match.
Right.
Mentally, there's no match.
No, you're right. You're exactly right, because there isn't. Peyton trusts his defense, knows what he has to do to get it done, and he did just enough all season. It wasn't a one-time thing.
Right. And look, ever since Manning came to the Broncos, I've been a follower. He's been on the team. I'm rooting for him 100%.
Right.
He's lost some physical ability. Absolutely. I am 100% convinced that he's the guy I wanted in the game.
Yeah.
And I've been a detractor this season.
No, he struggled. There's no denying that. He struggled.
I boot him when he's had bad games. I'm not kind of saying I was all in all the time, but if you have to pick a guy that you want to be leading the team when you're in the Super Bowl and you've got a defense the way we've got it,
yeah,
you're picking Peyton Manning.
Well, his teammates just believe in him so much. You can just see that the way that they responded to the game and the way they responded just the way he played. There was a feeling we're going to get this done with Peyton at the wheel. And I don't think that's a detraction from Brock. I just think they believe that much in Peyton Manning. Panthers,
I totally agree. If you're a Carolina fan, I'm not saying you're not behind Cam Newton 100%, but today there's got to be a couple questions about mental maturity.
Yeah, there does.
Ability to handle adversity.
Sure.
Going forward, right? So that's kind of if you're kind of comparing players of that nature, you gotta like where we have been in our ability to our ability to have a guy like Peyton Manning on the team. And let's be honest here, Brock had a lot to do with the success as well. So,
sure he did.
You know, and we'll find out what's going to happen with him. But it's kind of the best of both worlds, and credit to Coach Kubiak for being able to handle it as well as he has.
Yeah, I did, because you look at that situation, it could have gone so many ways, and about 99% of those ways are bad. It went about as well as it could have. Panthers got a field goal early in the fourth quarter, and it's 16-10. Now, here was my only cause for concern. It's 16-10. I'm starting to sit there and go, okay, but we're a botched play away. We're like a fluky play away from the Panthers taking the lead. The only thing that kept me having good faith, the Panthers had so many chances. How many times did we see them take over the ball at midfield? How many times did we see them right around their own 40 in the Denver territory, and they still couldn't get it done? They just couldn't find ways to score points.
Our defense was not going to be denied. I really don't think so. You know, and they really did take over the game, and they showed what they're all about. And I'm with you. I was, you know, because anything can happen with a score like that, and then they're in the lead. And
right.
You know, I know our defense has the ability to make plays, and they showed that.
Yeah, you just don't want a guy to slip and fall down or something, and all of a sudden you got a fluky touchdown.
Right, right, and that kind of stuff happens.
Yeah.
And so I was, you know, like I said, I was nervous, and I didn't like the score.
Right.
But I did like the fact that you could tell our defense was, you know, going to be pretty stiff.
Yeah, so tough to score against. 4 minutes left when the Panthers take over with the ball. You're sitting there saying, okay, here it is. 4 minutes left. There's only a possession or two remaining in the game.
Right.
Of course, we all know what happens. Von Miller does it again, knocks the ball loose, scramble around for the football. TJ Ward recovers it. Von and DeMarcus Ware were just completely unblockable this game. I think they registered 13 hits on Cam Newton. TJ Ward recovers it, and Denver now is in business. They're down, you know, inside the 10. CJ Anderson ends up plowing over Luke Kuechly for the touchdown. And then Peyton Manning, if you're looking for a trivia question, Peyton Manning, with one of the biggest plays of the game, two-point conversion, doesn't go to Demaryius Thomas, goes to Benny Fowler and converts the 2 points. Where in the world was Demaryius Thomas in this game? Amber alert?
He was right where he has been the last few games.
Yeah.
And I don't know. This is an interesting deal with him, because he just didn't play well.
Right.
And again, he had, and I know that Carolina's defense was good, but
and Josh Norman tried to take him away. Yeah,
one pass that should have been caught.
Yep, had the one drop. Had one that Peyton got him lit up. So you had,
but
that was the only two even targets. They didn't even throw to. They just basically said, okay, you want to take him away, take him away. We'll go somewhere else. We don't care.
Well, and you know, you got to make the most of every single thing that comes your way. And I don't know. Maybe there's a, you know, in a couple weeks or month, we'll find out that maybe Thomas had an injury that we didn't know about.
And I'm glad you said that, because it made me wonder that too.
I just don't know. He's been such a it's been confusing. You know, you hate to look at him signing a big deal and then disappearing, but that's kind of what happened.
Yeah, it was. And I'll tell you what, I will take Emmanuel Sanders 10 times out of 10. That kid is so tough. He is absolutely fearless. He plays hurt. He is unafraid. He goes and gets the football. I love Emmanuel Sanders. I wish Demaryius had just a tenth of what that guy does.
Yeah, and maybe that's our fault for looking at Demaryius Thomas and his size and his physical.
Right, he's so big. He's so strong.
Putting too much on him, right? Because we do look at Sanders, and you're exactly right for all the things you just said about him. He's I want him on my team. I want him catching balls. He's the type of not just guy who's going to practice hard and play hard and give it everything he's got every time he's out there. But he will play hurt.
Yeah, he will.
He wants to be out there, and he wants to make those plays. So he's a guy I would want on my team any day of the week.
Broncos seal up the win. 24-10. Von Miller becomes just the fourth linebacker in Super Bowl history to win the MVP. Von Miller, obviously, head and shoulders to me, you know, was the winner. It wasn't even close. But let me ask you this: if it wasn't Von, who would you have given that MVP to?
Well, I think there's a number of guys that really showed and took advantage of that. I know a lot of people say Malik Jackson, and
he was very good.
He had a heck of a game. I put T.J. Ward in the running there.
I do, too. I thought T.J. was phenomenal.
He had a great game. I think he took advantage of a couple instances and really helped the team out.
Was so physical all day.
I'd probably pick T.J. Ward.
Yeah, I think I probably would, too. He had the interception, and then just for a Super Bowl highlights, he had the interception and then the Fred Flintstone return, where he was just like, and he couldn't get going, and he just kept falling down on that horrible turf. Then he had the recovery of the fumble late. He had a number of big hits. He just was a presence all day. I think I would probably go with TJ as my MVP if it wasn't Vaughn. Vaughn was clearly the guy. But
and one of the reasons, you know, on that fumble recovery, if you go back and look, he's not even in the picture, you know, when that ball is on the ground.
No, he just kept coming, though.
All of a sudden, the ball gets kind of scooted back, and he just flying in. So, you know.
Could have had a touchdown.
He wasn't the only guy, but all 11 guys on defense were playing as hard as they could, you know, up to the whistle and really hustling to the ball and doing everything they could. But that was, I think that was a great example of T.J. Ward's mindset and how he was going to do everything he could, you know, to help the team win.
Well, they swarmed to the ball all year, and they showed it again on Sunday. Did you see the reaction of Eli Manning up in the box when that play took place?
I did, and I you know, when it happened, you kind of wonder what he's thinking.
Well, it was funny because
it was after the 2-point conversion, so I don't know. I'm not exactly sure what he was thinking, but it's easy to
laugh at because he looks like he's
easy to laugh at.
There's a face that he makes that's almost like disappointed that Peyton's going to win. I didn't take it that way, I'll be honest. When I saw it, I looked at it as I guess almost a coach, because that's what Eli is on the field as a quarterback. He looked at it kind of okay, but this game's not over.
Right.
I mean, that's just how you approach it.
Of course, I think that is. I mean, they're such a tight family. They're you know, they're rooting for each other.
Yes, they're trying to spin it that he was disappointed.
But yeah, I mean, and it's kind of what I was thinking too. You know, now we've done what we needed to do to get the score in a good place.
Now just finish.
Time to rest. There's still a job here, and it's not, you know, let's not get too excited.
Right, because a quick touchdown, if they would have given up a quick touchdown, the game technically wouldn't have been over. It would have still been tight.
No, not at all. Absolutely. And again, just let's think about who we're playing here. That's how they score. They score in bunches, and they score quick.
Yeah, exactly. Looking at Cam Newton, and we've seen a little bit now with how the game went, the way that he played, the post-game stuff, the walking out of obviously the interview. I guess I might have had a little bit of a different view of the way he carried himself. I did notice during the game not a lot of celebrating. Not a lot of first downs and dabbing, and the only footballs he gave away to anyone were mostly to T.J. Ward and Malik Jackson.
He wasn't
handing them to kids or anything. Did you have any issue with the way Cam carried himself after the game?
Not really. I found it more humorous than anything else, I guess. You know, he's got to live with it.
Sure.
If I'm a Carolina fan, yeah, I'm probably a little bit wondering if this is the guy.
I guess that's
again,
where I'd
like
be at, yeah.
I think there's a level of mental maturity that you have to have in order to fight through adversity, and he didn't have that. I'll be, you know,
no, he didn't
blunt about it. He just didn't have it. He didn't have it when he didn't try to recover a fumble. He didn't have it when he had to talk about the game. Come on, he's not the first guy. I mean, us in Denver, we've had to live through a lot of Super Bowl.
Hey, John Elway's taken that podium many times like that.
Absolutely.
In way worse situations.
Right. And nobody, a guy in his position doesn't get to just not do it if he doesn't want to do it.
Right.
So if I'm a Carolina fan, I probably have more problems with it than a fan of the team who won. And he'll have some time to think about it. But, you know, he did lose the game, and he lost it in a fashion which he didn't think so. So I get his disappointment. But
You know, when they were asking him those questions in that interview, the one of the beefs that I guess that I had with it, they're not really questions. You can't go to one of these guys and say, so talk about how disappointing it is. That's not a question. Ask him something. That's the stupidest thing. I understood why he was annoyed with that. You know, my biggest problem with Cam Newton, it wasn't the you know, the walking out of the interview. It wasn't that, yes, he sometimes act like a prima donna when he loses. My biggest problem that I had was when he made the statement, it wasn't anything that Denver did. It was just we played bad. Because that's when
right.
I say you don't get it.
Included, Denver didn't do anything special.
Yes. Well, they did do something pretty special. They shut you down.
I disagree with that.
I do too. And that's where I looked at it and said, yeah, you might not get it. And like you said, I don't care because I'm not a Carolina guy. But if I'm a Carolina fan, I might look at that and say, he might not get it. If he thinks it wasn't anything Denver did, he might not be very bright.
Well,
that would concern
me. That whole can of worms, which is, okay, so if Denver didn't do anything special and you just drop passes, magically fumbled balls,
then you're worse than we thought.
Then maybe you guys weren't as ready for the Super Bowl as you thought you were.
Exactly.
So, and clearly it's not that. They practice. They have a lot of talent on the team. Denver did do something special. They shut down an offense that was, you know, just running over people.
Yeah, they did.
And people don't like to look at defense as much as they like to look at offense.
It's more fun.
And, you know, I've talked to a few folks who, you know, Super Bowl was kind of average in terms of an entertaining game, and they're absolutely right. But I don't care.
Yeah, I don't know if it was that fun of a game. I'll say this though, it was an intense game. I don't know if it was a really well played game, but I think because of the intensity, it seemed like on every play until the very very end, the game was still in doubt. I think there was still an intensity about that game that hey, the game's in doubt. We're not quite sure who's going to win. It's a very physical game. I think that part. I understand it wasn't probably a pretty, you know, 31-38 kind of game. It was kind of a tough game and a physical game.
Yeah, and you're watching a pitcher's duel, not a home run derby. And for people who like one over the other, you know, you're not going to satisfy them, I guess, if it's not an offensive showdown. But I'll take a pitcher's duel, you know.
Especially if I have a good pitcher.
It's a very intense experience, and can be every bit as entertaining as, you know, a real offensive show, especially for us, right? Knowing that that's the way we wanted the game to go.
Oh, so absolutely.
It was a nail-biter for sure, and low scores were what we were hoping for.
Yeah, they were. If you get into a shootout, I think you're in big trouble, but this team hasn't been in shootouts all year. They've found a way to win.
Isn't it crazy that just a few years ago it's changed so dramatically?
Oh, it's just completely flipped.
If we look maybe 5 years out here, we've got an offense that follows a script that we know Gary Kubiak wants, which is the play-action type offense with just a solid defense, you know.
Well, and that offensive line should get better. You have some guys that are coming back. You have some guys that will be a little bit older. It's going to be an interesting team to watch going forward because they do have some pieces together, but they've got some free agents that they're going to have to deal with and some guys to sign and pay. Guys like Von Miller and Malik Jackson are going to want to get paid, and I understand it. I expect them to franchise Von. But let me ask you this. Because I struggle – start talking about all-time kind of things because I think we get caught up in the emotion of the Broncos. But I started to look at this. I want everybody to think about this for just a minute. The 85 Bears, one of the most dominating defenses ever to play. Here's the three quarterbacks they faced in the postseason. Phil Simms, Dieter Brock, and Tony Eason. Now, they dominated. They didn't. I think they allowed 10 points in the entire postseason. You're not exactly going against Murderer's Row there. The Baltimore Ravens, what was that, 2000 Baltimore Ravens,
right.
They faced Gus Frerotte, Steve McNair, Rich Gannon, and Kerry Collins.
Right.
This Denver Bronco defense completely shut down Ben Roethlisberger, Tom Brady, and Cam Newton and the number one ranked offense in the NFL. I don't know if they should be in that conversation, but I guess I kind of have to at least put them in there.
Absolutely, and let me take it a step further. All points you make are 100% true. Offense has, even in the last 5 years, the offensive philosophies and nature in the NFL have changed dramatically.
Well, and the rules have too, yeah.
And the rules have changed. So if already you have offenses who get the benefit of the doubt, more defensive penalties, and I just add that to the formula. We our defense has managed to do what it managed to do this year, even with all the advantages that the offenses have. Okay, add that, then Tom Brady, then Ben Roethlisberger and Cam Newton.
Sure.
And it does look like a special defense.
Yeah, no, I struggle to do that so early. I think you kind of have to wait and see how things play out and see how the, but when you just look at it right away, those guys weren't exactly going against Murderers Row in the postseason. Chicago Bears especially didn't really face anyone in the postseason. And granted, they shut, I mean, they were shutting teams out. They were holding teams to literally 0 points, but I think Denver's defense at least has to be at least involved there. Hey,
I do too.
Enjoyed so much having you on, coming on, talking Broncos, talking Super Bowl, and just talking the NFL in general. Always fun to have you on. I was glad you were able to stop by and kind of go over and recap this game with us.
Hey, man, it's been fun. And if you think about, you know, we saw each other at a training camp, you know,
yeah,
a few short months ago, and this is how it ended. I couldn't be happier for the team and thank you, Clint, for having me on the show. It's been a pleasure. And on a personal note, I just want to wish you a happy birthday.
Oh wow, you're gonna let that cat out of the bag.
Kind of saving that for the end. just want everybody to maybe think about you a little bit today.
I want you to know that I don't feel a day over Peyton Manning's arm feels.
Well, you certainly don't look a day over 70, and you know you're in good shape, good health. That's all you can ever ask for at this stage of your career, correct?
Well, no, I can ask for a lot more. I can ask for a ton of things. I just am not. I'm just not going to. But no, I could ask for a lot more things. But I'm just not going to go down that road. I appreciate that so much. Thank you for joining us. You know we will do this again. I appreciate any time you can stop by the Daily Dose. And hey, Denver Broncos are Super Bowl champions. That is something that's pretty cool and pretty memorable.
Broncos rule. Thanks, Clint.
Now, as we do every single week, we have got to get to our Daily Dose top five. You know, on Super Bowl Sunday, we saw Peyton Manning win his second Super Bowl in four tries. But let's be honest, and we talked about it a little bit, you know, with Larry, it wasn't pretty. It wasn't always pretty. You want to talk about a game manager? Peyton Manning had to manage the game. Did never have that huge mistake, but it wasn't always very pretty. Peyton Manning on Super Bowl Sunday went 13 of 23 for 141 yards. He had no touchdowns, and he did throw one interception, also fumbled once. I started thinking about, you know, other quarterbacks maybe that won Super Bowls and didn't really show their best performance on Super Bowl Sunday. And so today, the Daily Dose top five worst performances in a Super Bowl by a quarterback that still managed to win the game. And I'll tell you this right now, and I'll tell you afterwards, all these guys have something in common. They all have one thing in common, really, really important. Let's take a look at the quarterbacks who didn't always put on their best performance but still won the Super Bowl. Number five, hey, it's got to be Peyton Manning's boss, right? John Elway in Super Bowl 32. You know, people forget because Elway had some big moments in that game, but let's be honest, John Elway wasn't very good when he faced the Green Bay Packers in Super Bowl 32. He had the long throw to Ed McCaffrey in the second half. He had a running touchdown early in the game where he went play action. Hey, TD, you got to be in there because otherwise they won't believe it. You got to sell the play action. And then John rolls out and gets the touchdown. And he had the big helicopter play that is etched in so many people's memory. But John Elway was really, really average in that game. When you look at his game, it was so similar to what Peyton Manning did on Sunday. For the game, Elway went 12 of 22 for just 123 yards. You might not remember, but in the second quarter, the Broncos kick off. The kickoff is fumbled, and Denver takes over with a chance to build on an early lead. Could have put themselves up by a few scores. Elway immediately goes over the middle and throws an interception to Eugene Robinson. He had the one pick. He had a fumble. He was sacked five times. But you know what? The Broncos beat the Packers 31-24. And hey, we all remember, this one's for John. You know, didn't have a great game though. John Elway looked very, very mediocre in that first Super Bowl that he won. Number four on our list has got to be Joe Theismann with the Washington Redskins in Super Bowl 17. You know, the Redskins beat the Dolphins 27-17. And what we all kind of remember is, remember John Riggins? John Riggins has like 38 carries. He goes for 166 yards. He has the big touchdown at the end of the game to seal it. But we kind of forget that Joe Theismann was really, really average. Theismann was 15 of 23. He only had 143 yards. He threw two touchdowns, short touchdowns, but he also threw two interceptions that were keeping the Dolphins in the game. That's the reason the Dolphins were still in this game, and it was as close as it was. Theismann was sacked three times. He had a very, very mediocre game in the biggest of games. Speaking of those Dolphins, let's go to our number three pick. Bob Greasy in the Super Bowl. And you might sit there and say, well, which Super Bowl? Because he went Super Bowl VII, they won it. Went to Super Bowl VIII, they won it. Pick one. I don't care. You can pick either one of them. You know, the 72 Miami Dolphins, they're the only team to ever complete that perfect season without a single loss. They didn't have a single loss. And we know this because every year those delusional geriatrics remind us every year when they pop the prune champagne when all the teams in the NFL lose a game. But here's the thing I want you to keep in mind with Bob Greasy. Super Bowl VII, the first one, he goes 12 of 23, 134 yards, and he threw an interception. Now, the following year when they go, they have the perfect season, and I'll listen to this stat line. Bob Greasy in the Super Bowl went 8 of 11, 88 yards. He had a touchdown. He also had an interception. These teams won because of their defense and because of, you know, that offensive line and Larry Zonka. Bob Greasy really didn't do much of anything in those games. He was kind of irrelevant. It's kind of funny the way we remember these things, though. Number two on our list, you knew he was going to come in on this list. You knew. I mean, if you talked about a quarterback that might be one of the, I guess, worst quarterbacks to win a Super Bowl, obviously Trent Dilfer is going to come to the top of your list. Super Bowl 35, you know, Dilfer had one of the greatest defenses ever in Baltimore. I mean, the Baltimore Ravens defense allowed 10 points a game. 10 points a game. He didn't need to do much. And he didn't do much. In the Super Bowl against the New York Giants, Dilfer goes 12 of 25, had 153 yards, had a touchdown, also had a fumble, and somehow was kind of keeping a pretty average New York Giants team in the game, but it didn't matter. Dilfer got the win, and Dilfer has a ring, which is, you know, again, something these guys have in common. Number one on our list of quarterbacks who won the Super Bowl without really having a big performance, It's gotta be Ben Roethlisberger in Super Bowl 40. You know, Ben has had some good games since. He had the game against the Cardinals. He had a decent game against the Packers. But in Super Bowl 40, Ben Roethlisberger was pretty awful. The Steelers won on the running of Willie Parker and Jerome Bettis. They had a solid defense. And let's be honest, the Steelers won on some pretty questionable calls from the officiating. The Steelers beat the Seahawks 21-10. Check out this stat line from Ben Roethlisberger. 9 of 21 for 123 yards and 2 interceptions. That's it. No touchdowns. No nothing. Ben Roethlisberger was pretty awful. You know what all these guys have in common, though? They all won. And no one remembers those stats. The same thing goes for Peyton Manning. You're not going to sit there and say, well, yeah, but in that second Super Bowl he won, you know, he didn't really have the stat line. No one's going to remember that. They're just going to remember Peyton Manning won 2 Super Bowls. Hey, next week, we didn't get a chance to get to it this week. We've got to hand out some NFL awards, some season-ending awards. We will give those out daily dose style. NBA All-Star Weekend. I talked about that just a little bit coming up. You've got the dunk contest. You've got the All-Star game. You've got some of those things. We'll have to recap a little bit of that, and I'll have to give you a spin on can we improve this a little bit? Because I guarantee we're probably going to be disappointed. Don't forget, I told you before, Valentine's Day is on Sunday. Take care of the ones that you love. I have to say thanks to Raymond for coming back in, being a good sport about that, coming back in and coming on the show. I appreciate that. Have to say thank you to Larry in Centennial for joining us as well. Always good to have you on the Daily Dose. If you get a chance, head over to iTunes, give us a 5-star rating and a quick review. We would appreciate that so, so, so much. It would mean so much to us. Have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. Hope you all have a great Valentine's Day. I will see you all next week.